This is HPR episode 2593 entitled, Intro to Dabelli's Antiquitates, and is part of the series, Tabletop Gaming. It is hosted by Tutorto, and is about 27 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, short intro to tabletop wargame called DBA.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hi, and welcome to the Hacker Public Radio. I'm your host, Tuukka, and this episode will be about Dabelli's Antiquitates, or short for DBA. So, what is DBA? I got an inspiration for this episode from Klatu, who has been doing an episode recently about various board games. So, surprisingly, or not surprisingly, DBA is a board game or tabletop game. It's a tabletop war game for two players that is fairly easy to learn, doesn't take tons of time or doesn't need big amounts of space. It's played on a 30 inch board with two armies of tiny miniatures. And those miniatures are ones that I'm currently painting, so if there's any or pauses in the recording, that they are there probably because I'm in middle of doing something complicated or delicate thing. So in DBA, you have two armies fighting each other on a tabletop, and the difference between DBA and some other tabletop war games is that DBA is a fairly small and doesn't take much of time or space. Each army has 12 elements or units, and those armies consist and there are various armies throughout the time, starting from the 3000 years BC all the way up to the 1400 AD. So there's ancient Egyptians, various Roman armies, Aztecs, samurais, you name it. And the way the DBA handles different eras is that, like, there's nothing prevents you having an anachronistic battle of, for example, French ordnance versus post-Mongol samurai or versus ancient Kushite army. And how the DBA managed to do that is that the game models various units not by their armament, but how they were actually used in the battle. So if you have a unit that is shooting lots of arrows, it's bows in the game. And it doesn't matter if they are shooting crossbows or if they are shooting longbows, they are bows in the game. And if you have a army unit that fights in a close formation using bladed weapons, there are blades in the game. Like late samurai with the short or Roman legionnaires or dismounted knights, for example. And this is really nice because it allows players to concentrate on how unit was used, how certain type of unit was used, they don't have to think about the armament or how they would differ between units. Just the idea is to concentrate on how certain unit was used and play accordingly. So there are various units in the play. For example, plates, hordes, those are huge masses of people who are not skilled in fighting. Chariots, which are just special case of cavalry, knights that are cavalry that is very impetuous, like they like charge through the enemy ranks and so on. So each player has an army, and each player has same size of army. In every game, both players have an army of 12 units or elements, and this makes it easier to sort of balance the game because you don't have to have rules for balancing an army with lots of units, lots of low quality units against an army of few high quality units. This of course also means that if all similar units between armies behave in the same way. So if you have a spears, those are units that fought with a big shield and a pointy stick, basically. So if you have a Spartan spears unit, it will perform equally well as any other spear unit. There aren't any difference between armies. So how the game goes? So two players, each with an army. The goal is to win the opponent by either defeating the general, which is one of the units on the table, or by destroying 1/3 of the army without itself suffering more equal amount of damage. So if you win the opponent's general and you haven't lost more units than the and you have lost less units than the opponent, or if you have won 1/3 of opponent's army and have lost less units than the opponent, then you win. And vice versa, of course. And unlike in more complicated games, there isn't any written order phase. The game runs by turns. And on each turn, player throws a 1d6, 600 die, and gets a amount of command points that the die tells him. So, and those command points are used to move the units on the board. This is used to simulate the confusion and difficulties of communicating with the units in the mid of the combat. It's awfully frustrating sometimes to be playing and have you really great battle plan destroyed because you keep throwing lots of ones and twos in this phase. But that's just how it goes. Luckily the game is really fast, so if you lose a game you can just set it up again and have another go. Typically games take less than hour to finish. Sometimes even faster. Sometimes they end up in a matter of minutes, depending on your luck or your plan or combination of thereof. One funny way to lose the game is to have your general following a elephant and having the elephant to lose in the combat and start retreat, crushing your general. Because in the game, elephants are dangerous to both sides. In theory, they are less dangerous to you, but than your opponent, if they are your own elephants. But you still have to be mindful that they are slow and hard to control, and can cause damage if they decide to back up. So you get a command point when you draw a die, and that is used to move your units around. So typically moving one element takes one command point. There are some special cases, like if your unit is far away from your commander general, then it takes 1 point more. Or if they are in the middle of the forest, or your general is in the middle of the forest for some odd reason, because then the leading of the battle is really hard for the general, then movement costs one more, and so on. Some units like artillery, these are catapults and ballistas, and even some primitive cannons later in the game. Moving those take one extra point. And because you cannot move that many units, even if you draw six, if you move them one by one, you can group them. You can have a neat little battle formation, and whole formation moves in as a group. And of course, as soon as you encounter a forest, you have to adapt. You cannot march in a neat line through the forest. You have to be in a column, or you have to go around the forest, or you have to break up your army or battle line. Same thing as soon as you come. It's easy to march in a plain field, but when you encounter the enemy and you start throwing and pushing, then your battle line starts to fall apart. And what else? As soon as you collide with the enemy, you start throwing a die about who wins the combat. Some units perform better against some units, and some units are not so strong. Like light horse, for example. These are units that ride with a horse, throw light spears, shoot with a light bows, and then run away or ride away. They are not strong by themselves, but they are also very hard to catch, because they are so fast. And they are really great at harassing the flanks. For example, they are really horrible in the forest, but they are really great in the open plains. So as soon as you get into close combat, both players throw a die, compare one or two tables to see which side wins. And sometimes nothing happens, sometimes your opponent backs up a little bit, sometimes they start free, sometimes they are destroyed and are removed from the play. And some units, if the opponent flees or backs up a little bit, follow them. Knights, for example, they're so impetuous or eager to engage that they are impossible to control. As soon as they get into the combat, they just start running after the enemy or riding after the enemy. Warbands are the same. And close combat isn't everything that there is. There's also two types of missile fire. There's bows that shoot on every turn, Like, when I move, they or don't move them. As long as there's somebody on the range, they shoot them. And they also do the same thing on my opponent's turn. And then there's the artillery that only shoot on my turn, if they're my artillery, of course. And can't shoot if they have moved, because these are slow and cumbersome. These are huge siege engines, for example, or primitive cannons that take time to set up. And, well, that's basically, there's of course a little bit special rules. There are forests, there's swamps, there's different kinds of hills. Hills are nice. They provide the advantage on the unit that is on the high ground, and they break the line of sight, and they also look nice on the tabletop. Because big part of the draw for me for the game is that you get to build and paint and do all kinds of creative arts and crafts. Of course, you can just buy the, for example, the heels from the gaming store. There's countless of different kinds of heels, and for example, model railway stuff works fairly well with the game. But I just like building stuff by myself. And what else? Well, that's pretty much it. Players alternate between each turns. Like, first I go and then the opponent goes and then I go, and it keeps repeating until one side wins. Draws aren't really possible in this game, because if there's a situation where it's a draw, it just keeps going until one side wins. Like that. I'm currently painting horses for the ancient British army that I'm building. So that's the sound of me washing the brush in between of changing colors. Then there's if 12 units isn't big enough, you can play a variant called Big Battle DPA, where you have three armies, but I have on each side. But I have never ever tried that. The game is fun because you can have various kinds of armies of different eras, and they fight nicely against each other. There isn't later armies don't have any advantage over the earlier armies. Of course, the composition of the army can have some effect on how you play it. If you have an army of consisting only of siloi or light skirmishing infantry, then it's really hard to play on open plains. But if you have a lot of forest, for example, then they are pretty well there. Alright, the composition of armies, that I forgot completely. I should have written some sort of outline for the episode. But so, like I said, every army has 12 units on the table, and unlike in other games, you don't have, or in some other games, of course, you don't use points to purchase your army, but you have a pre-made army list. There's I don't know how many, probably well over 100 different army lists in the book, rule that are by the sort of country or tribe or whatever you want to call it. Like you have ancient Egyptians and you have Sumerians and then you have a post-Mongol samurai and then you have a Aztecs and then you have a late medieval Polish armies and Wars of the Roses army for the Brits. And anyway, you have army lists for region or faction or group, whatever, and for a certain period of time. Like for the Romans, you have well over 10, and that's not counting the Byzantine stuff. That's just the Western Empire, starting from the early Roman armies where they fought in the, you know, what's that called? The, not cohort, but not manipul, but I'm drawing a blank. Well, it doesn't matter. That's the. But now it bothers me. Some Greek formation. Phalanx, yeah, phalanx. So you have a early Roman armies where they were fighting in a phalanx, so consisting mostly of spears with a little bit of maybe one unit of horses. And then you have a Marian Romans that is mostly of legionaries, and then you have a early Imperial Romans that is legionaries, blades, and then you have some auxiliary units, few foot units, and maybe a ballista. And then late Byzantine armies, you have cataphracts, like heavily armored horses that really excel in a plains, but are really, really in a trouble in the woods. And within those army lists, you might have some room for choosing elements. Like they usually say that this is your core. These are the ones that you are always taking. And then you can pick from this set. Like you can have choice between, for example, with ancient British, you have some amount of warbands, and then you have a choice between chariots and warbands. And then I think there was a horse, or light horse there too. So while you have a pre-made army list, you have some say to what kind of army exactly you want to play. And because the armies are fairly small, it doesn't take tons of figurines to paint, that you need to paint, so it doesn't take tons of time. Also, it doesn't take lots of space or money to have to build your armies. People often end up with multiple armies. Like when I started this, I built two Wars of the Roses armies, York and Lancaster, which are, on a retrospect, did be quite big because there's quite a bit of options. So I built and painted two armies, took them to the local gaming store and asked my friends that, hey, I have this new game, I have complete set of figurines, do you want to play? And that's how we started. Nowadays I'm mostly painting, I'm not playing that much. And big part is that all the research that you can do when you start setting up your army, like reading about where they lived and what they did and what kind of color scheme their armies used and what kind of famous people were in that era and such things. But that's basics of the DBA. There's a more complex games of the sort of same series called DBM and DBMM Develis, multitudinis and debellis magister militum, if I'm not mistaken. Those I haven't played, they are fairly bit more complex and also fairly bit require fairly bit more units to play. But the good thing with the DPA and DPM and DPMM is that they use the same general basing rules, like the rules on what size base you attach your tin soldiers. So in theory you can start by building a DPA army and then start adding a units on that to get to DPM or DPMM army. I haven't done that, those games don't really interest me that much. They are fairly bit more complex and they have a point system and they have a difference between different kinds of units in a way that you can have a superior quality or inferior quality and such units. So there your Spartan spearmen are stronger than some other spearmen. But in DPA that's not the case. The spearman is a spearman. Very the Spartan or barbarian or samurai or what. Which also makes the game easier to learn. And while the rulebook is a thin, it's extremely dense. Like the information is packed really tightly, and it can be quite hard to read and decipher when you start. Luckily, the Washington area players have written their own guide that expands. It has expands the official rulebook. It has more examples and it has more verbose explanation of rules and it has more readable tables. So if you start with DPA or if you are interested with the DPA, I really recommend that you get hold of that booklet and read that, because it makes the game much easier to understand in the beginning. That booklet doesn't contain army lists, so you still need to get a copy of the official rules. The current version, I believe, is 3. I haven't played that. I have only played the previous version 2.2, but the difference shouldn't be that big for what I have read. I'll try to find a link to that and include that into the show notes. But I guess that's for it for now. Thanks for listening. Have a good one. Bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.